this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often have OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. Records, news ads, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not to the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of Liberty, Prosperity, and the Highway to the North, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, February 7th, 2023. How's everybody doing out there? I hope okay. Anyway, where have I been? Dealing with a major family crisis right now. Don't know how I'm sounding out there. Let me wait for the stream to catch up. We have a lot of echoes going on. Okay, let me see what's going on. Okay, for whatever reason, I'm getting a lot of echo in a lot of this stuff lately. Anyway, okay, there we go. Okay. I gotta figure this out, because it's like every program and everything else that we're doing here. And this keeps happening, and it keeps changing, and it keeps doing everything else. Okay. Let's go and, okay, I think we got to sort it out. All right, where have I been? I've had a major family crisis over the last 2 weeks, actually one minor one, one major one. So thank you for everybody being out there with all the support. I've gotten text messages. I've gotten email. I've got all different other types of things going on. Just say that be happy. Whatever situation is, be happy if things aren't really, be happy if nothing major is going on. We've had, but what I always remember is that there are other people out there with bigger issues than me. And I'll be philosophical on this. I think we are given these situations because we can handle them, and we have to show resilience, and we have to make a good example for everybody else and try to be an inspiration for everyone else. At least that's what I keep telling myself. But when you're in that situation, you don't really, it's kind of hard to see the bigger picture with things. I'm told that the book of Job, right, and from the Bible, right, all of these, we could understand. We're not to really understand the things, bigger things out there. Long-term stuff going on, the overall stuff. I've had a lot of bad things happen to me. I'm not saying I got more bad things than other people, but I've had a tremendous amount of bad things happen to me over the years. And one thing that I've always learned is that with all this stuff that what's the word I'm looking for? Things happen, and then much later on, you find out why they happened. You may never find out why they happened. You find what happened and why they happened, and then you go from there. It's just one of those things. Okay. And that's it. So we're just going to go over. I really don't have any big long speeches or anything else prepared here like I did. We're going to go into the news and views of everything and everything's safety. We'll see how far we get tonight. This is going to be ending up at 9 o'clock as usual. All right. And we are streaming out there. So we're good. We're good. Things are working now. All right. So for whatever reason, the press releases from the Department of Labor have slowed down, it seems. And from OSHA, I know that they're extremely active because we get a lot of phone calls. We have phone calls galore every day with people with OSHA issues. And you could get in contact with us too at jim@safetywords.com or 845-269-5772. This past week, we had a situation where a executive at a high-level company I work at, a big company I work with, they needed safety training. They're managing different types of jobs, and they did not understand the process of OSHA, the process of what they were doing. Safety-wise, what to look out for, the pitfalls, the leading indicators that I look for. Other people look for, safety training has to be relevant to what you're doing. And with this particular safety training, it was not the person on the shovel end. This was a manager. So we approached the whole thing like, how does a manager manage this type of project? How does a manager assess the contractors they're working with? How does the manager assess what a leading indicator, what could indicate that you might have a problem with a company? And that's often what I do, and it's one-on-one, and that's often what I do with managers. We go into HOP, obviously, intro to HOP. We have a very long discussion. We talk about Jens Rasmussen. We talk about error modes, error rates, and trying to set up a job so you're in that all-important skills mode where you have high familiarity with the job, a low attention span. And he said, well, you know, Jimmy, that low attention span, that doesn't seem well. But it has to deal with the job. With the low attention span, high familiarity, you have the lowest amount of errors. And it's hard to get your concept around because we've been told low attention span means that you are complacent with the job and you're not checking out what's going on out there. That's what we've been told again and again and again and again. We all know that it is, as the Romanians call it, rohat. You could go look that one up. So, that's not what we're about. That's not what we're doing. We're about making things safer. The other thing I came across, I have a lot of little things I put down, predatory hiring. Then we have safety tyranny. All these things are out there, right? We've coined here a couple of other terms, but that's the other thing. Safety tyranny. Do you really want to rule your job site as a tyrant? My opinion is this, and this was my client's experience with everything and a lot of other safety professionals. The more you have a command and control type situation where you will, right, like Eric Cartman from South Park, you will respect my authority, right? And walking around like a Department of Interior guy, right? Not a little spoof. I know that's a little bit of an older reference there. That's the less effective you're going to be doing safety. So I try to keep things light. When I'm in the field, keep things light, keep everybody getting along. They'll get the donuts once a week for the job, right? Name your thing. Try and get along. I was talking over the weekend with around the campfire at a Boy Scout event with another father who's also an assistant scoutmaster. And we were just talking about work and everything. I never really got to know this gentleman. Really great guy. I never had a problem with him. But, you know, you don't get to know people. Let's my opinion, unless you're sitting around a fire, and if you have shared experiences, shared struggles, in this case, getting a campfire started, you tend to get to know the person. So I got to try to get to know him, and one of the things that he said, you know, and he's an occasional listener out there, he says, you do know that your data that you generate, that you're talking about, all your safety stuff out there, people are making models with this. And he's in charge. I'm not allowed to go into details. He's in charge. He's one of the people in charge of an organization that uses safety data, among other things, to write input into computer programs to assess risk. And it's all proprietary. And it's, he works for a company you've heard of. Anyway. He said, this is all really interesting what you're talking about, because a lot of stuff that you're auditing in the field that I hear we're talking about work. Well, what do you audit? Things of that nature. I've been auditing a lot of regular general industry offices that have insurance policies that the insurances are from overseas, and they require a very detailed safety audit. And he says, all that data that you're generating goes into programs like Right. And I said, well, that's really interesting. So we talk about predicting accidents and things of that nature, but there are actual people out there that do this for a living. And to hear it from a programmer's perspective, it was pretty interesting. But the same basic rules apply, what we've always said here and what we've always said in other venues. It's extremely difficult to predict an accident. Accidents happen almost at random, unless, and I've always put this caveat in, unless you're able to generate a lot of data points. And I mean a tremendous amount, because that's the way statistics work. And they have to be objective, not subjective, objective data points. And I said, well, how many data points are you looking at? With your programs to assess risk. He says, for a reliable program, you literally have to be thousands and tens of thousands of data points being generated all at the same time. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting that you would say that. So what does that mean for us? What do we do with that? Your organization, are they generating thousands of subjective data points? Or I'm sorry, thousands of objective data points. Or are they doing subjective data points? Because unless they're doing that, at least according to this person, the models are all guvno. So something you have to do. I said, well, how reliable are your stuff? He says, for what we do and what we're assessing risk on, pretty accurate. So, okay, we'll leave it at that. Here we have a federal court orders a Portland restaurant to pay $540,000 to employees after illegal splitting tips. And there's a lot of talk out there, a lot of controversy on tips out there. A lot of people feel, ridiculous about the tips. I mean, they add on tips onto everything automatically now. And people don't watch and they add more to the tips. So, for example, you go out to a restaurant with six people, they're going to put an automatic tip on there. And then people will watch, they add more tips. And where does this come out to in this country? Because it doesn't happen too much in other countries. It comes back to the Civil War and prior to the Civil War in this country and in the Deep South, and even where they didn't want to pay people anything. They were former slaves or anything else, so they let the customers pay folks. And this is where it came into, and it's kept up with the restaurants. I tell you what, I have mixed feelings on tipping. But here we have an investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division found 11 restaurants operating under a Portland-based restaurant chain illegally allowed, and we don't normally mention names here, illegally allowed managers to participate in tip pools. By doing so, will a portion of employees earn tips? Federal law prohibits some restaurant employees from tipping out of managers tipping out managers from a tip pool, including paid on an hourly basis. The investigation also revealed the employer hired a 17-year-old minor to drive a motor vehicle, a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Hazardous Occupations for Minors. The resolution, the consent judgment, permanently enjoins the company and the owners and company officer from violating the FLSA and orders a payment of $270,000-plus in back wages as well as the same amount in liquidated damages for 367 employees. How many times do they go back? Right? How many years? The court also ordered the company to pay close to $30,000 in penalties. I tell you what, it's one of those things, guys, right? A lot of crap is going on out there. U.S. Department of Labor finds a farm processing again exposes workers to multiple hazards at an Ohio chicken processing plant. So let's see what we have here. This is, I'm going down here, and let's do a share screen, our famous share screens on Safety Wars. Mm-hmm. Do a share screen to get this up here, and all right. Do-do-do-do. Come on back. And all right, here we go. So this is how, and I went through this with a client this morning. It's extremely important that you go through and you read. If you receive one of these OSHA citations, you read the whole thing. Because there is a lot of data in here that people miss on how they do this, on what they do. There's a lot of stuff that you miss unless you actually read everything. Now, okay. All right, we're going to scroll down and let's look at this. Notice to employees of informal conference. You have to actually post this in a public area where the where your workers meet. So normally my clients do this in a lunchroom or time clock with this, and they take a picture of it to prove that they actually did it. The next thing is this, certification of corrective action worksheet. You need to fill this out. Send it in. Why? Because then it gets into everything. And if you know, it gets inputted into a database. Whoever, that's my belief on here. And here we have I love this, USC 666. Whoever knowingly makes any false statements, representative or representation or certification in any application, record, plan, or other documents filed or required to be maintained pursuant to the act shall, upon conviction, be punished by a fine of not more than $10,000 or by imprisonment of not more than 6 months or both. So if you have a client that wants to mess around with this, make sure your name isn't on it, number one. If you're an employee, make sure your name is not on this. Right? This has got to come from a manager. That's what I always recommend. So this company here, the inspection dates were and from last August to January of this year, and the issuance date was today, on the 7th. Citation 191 series, vertical clearance above any stair tread to any overhead obstruction is at least 6'8" as measured from the leading edge of the tread. On or about August 7th, 2023, in the sludge press building, there was an overhead obstruction at a height of approximately 49.25 inches above the leading edge of the third stair tread, caused by a sludge discharge pipe running across the stairs that was used to access a platform, causing employees trip and fall hazards, descending or descending the stairs. This is a new one for me. I thought know, some of the things out there, you're like, man, would anybody actually ever do that? Yeah, well, the regulation is there. So we should do that. So that was $10,140. Each one, item two, each flight of stairs having at least three treads and at least four risers equipped with stair rails and handrail sisters. Handrail systems and handrails as follows. Okay, and they did not have a stair rail on thing on two staircases, $10,140. Citation one, item three, again, 3A. This is lockout tagout, $16,131. They got him under the new fine level, right? Maybe that's why they put the inspection out to January on that, to get the new fine fee schedule here, because this, I don't know. So the established procedures for the application of energy control, the lockout or tagout procedures, shall cover the following elements and actions and shall be done in the following sequence as required by 29 CFR 1910-147. Again, they did not have, let's see here. So there are associate employees exposed with associated moving parts of hydraulic lifting arms and going nip points and unguarded chains and sprockets caught between the hyoids between moving edges. The employer did not implement an energy control application steps as the machine was not shut down or turned off to perform servicing work. So if you're going to service something, you got to go through the lockout tagout, which I always point out on the hierarchy of controls is a rule and therefore an administrative step. And therefore you're going to have people. It's not very reliable, right? Not very reliable. Well, Jim, what do you mean? Well, lockout tagout is a set of rules, guys. Not very reliable. Yes, you're eliminating a hazard. However, you're getting there through a rule. And how often do our rules violations there? Well, $16,131. 1910-147, again, not a personal lot, not or personal lockout or tagout advice, not a fix. $0 there. Citation one, item four, serious, no guards. $12,676, machine guarding. Citation one, item five, type of violation, serious. No guards. Again, $12,676. Citation one, item six. All sprocket wheels and chains shall be enclosed unless they are more than 7 feet above the floor or platform. $12,676. Citation one, item seven, 1910-219. All projecting keys, set screws, and other projections and revolving parts shall be removed or made flush or guarded by a metal cover. So in this case, a wings conveyor, I don't know what kind of conveyor that is, but it's a wings conveyor. Employees were exposed to caught in hazards using unprotected rotating shaft. Again, that was $12,676. Citation one, item seven. Type of violation, serious. No guards. $15,211. Citation two. This was a repeat. Each employee needs to be protected from tripping into or stepping in or into or through any hole that is less than 4 feet above a lower level. So, let's see here. The employer did not ensure employees were protected from stepping into two approximately 9-inch wide, 6 inches long floor holes, range between 22 and 45 inches in depth. And going on, second one was on or about August. The employer did not ensure employees were protected from stepping into two approximately 9-inch wide by 46 inches long floor holes and were approximately 22 inches in depth that were open when the hydraulic lifting arms were in the up position. Exposed employees to trip and flip, both of these, exposing employees to trip and fall hazards at the same level. This was done previously on March 21st, 2019. year. So again, $76,054. Probably would have cost almost nothing to fix this from the description. Citation to item two, a lockout town. Procedural issue. Second time they got caught was the $63,382. Citation to item three, training. Repeat. Second time they were caught with this, $161,000. Citation three, item one, procedural, repeat, other. And again, no procedures with this stuff. $1,267. They went easy on them that because it was a repeat. Citation three, item two, a repeat, other. $506. And the width of working space in front of electrical equipment shall be the width of the equipment or 30 inches, whichever is greater. In all cases, working space shall permit at least a 90 degree opening of equipment doors or hinge panels. $506. Again, locking a door to open it. We're almost there, guys. And we'll take a break. Citation three, item three, type of violation, repeat other, unless specifically permitted otherwise, in paragraph, blah, 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 blah. Flexible cords and cables may not be used as substitute for fixed wiring of a structure. Again, on or about, blah, blah, blah. A flexible cord was used as fixed wiring for a death on arrival conveyor drive motor. Again, this was a repeat, $1,267. And the final one, citation for item one, 1910-178. That is an industrial, powered industrial truck. Nobody trained. By the way, I'm doing 2 days of training on that this week. You know, you need it? 845-269-5772. And for a grand total, propose $393,449. Okay, and we're going to go to commercial break.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Pozell, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now, he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all. With his engaging storytelling and expert analysis, Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Pozell and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Learning is vital. Learning is vital.
Thank you so much, honey. That was my wife. Can we get a round of applause for her?
Bonfire.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
All right, this is a news release. A roofing company out of Alabama pays $117,175 penalty after a 15-year-old's fatal fall at an Alabama work site. Apex Roofing and Storage, I'm going to mention it this time. Apex Roofing and Restoration LLC paid $117,175 in civil monetary penalties after USDOL determined that the roofing contractor employed a 15-year-old child in violation of federal child labor laws, resulting in the child's death at a Coleman work site. On July 1st, a teen reported to the work site for the first day on the job while working on the roof of a Coleman Casting Corporation building. The teen worker fell 50 foot to the floor below, suffering fractures in the wrist, skull, and ribs, among other severe injuries. The teen was pronounced dead at the scene. They the department's wage and hour division found Apex Roofing illegally employed the teen in violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act, child labor hazardous occupation order that prohibits workers under the age of 18 from engaging in dangerous jobs designated by the act, including roofing and construction operations. After an investigation begun in 2019, the agency assessed the civil monetary penalty of $117,175 through the Child Enhanced Penalty Program. The program increases penalties to address violations that cause the death or serious injuries of any worker under the age of 18. I don't know what to tell you. I'll skip down. Obvious tragedy. In the fiscal year 2023, the wage an hour division found child labor violations in more than 915 investigations, resulting in more than $8 million in penalties. I can tell you this much. It happens a hell of a lot more than 950 times. I know in, right, I'm clicking through here. Right, so this is going up and up and up every year, it seems. That's the trend. I mean, this is what they know about. Probably if this child did not get killed, we probably would have never heard of this. My problem is that it took 5 years to get there. Really? Well, we didn't have COVID, but come on. An emergency temporary U.S. Department of Labor obtains emergency court order for retirement plan assets. Alleged Pittsburgh company owner embezzled $5.5 million from the plans. An emergency temporary restraining order issued by the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The action follows a complaint and motion filed by the U.S. DOL on January 26th. That is a third-party administrator for at least 240 retirement plans that hold millions of dollars of plan assets and acts as an agent to manage and administer plan assets. At least 229 of these retirement plans are covered by the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. An investigation by the department's Employee Benefits Security Administration determined that River's Edge Advanced Retirement Solutions, LLC, and its owner violated ERISA. Right, from October 2022 through January 2024, and the defendants embezzled $5.5 million retirement plan assets from 17 retirement plans by transferring them from retirement plan trusts into their own corporate accounts. I don't have enough background on here to really comment. I'm just going to put it out there. Here's another one. Steel agriculture employer pays 18,000 back wages and penalties. Right. And it's out of Steel, Alabama. They recovered 8,862 in back wages for 106 workers. And these were from immigrants, right? The H-2A program. The H-2A program enables agriculture employees to hire temporary non-immigrant workers to meet business demands while protecting U.S. workers. And with that, I tell you what, if they're violating these things, they're violating a lot of other things. It's a leading indicator. U.S. Department of Labor cites Alabama construction employer after heat illness claims life of a 33-year-old worker at a Huntsville job site. This was released on Friday, on the 5th, Monday. During the peak summer in July 2023, a 33-year-old concrete finisher collapsed at a Huntsville construction site after showing clear signs of heat illness, a tragedy that federal safety investigators found could have been prevented had the employer followed established safety practices for heat hazards. An investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration into the July 28, 2023 fatality found workers of SJNL General Contractor were hand-forming concrete curbs run at the heat index neared 170 degrees and the humidity climbed to 85%. The worker was seen by co-workers stumbling, talking incoherently, and eventually vomiting before becoming unresponsive, as indicative of a heat stroke. Though employees provided first aid and paramedics transported the worker to the hospital, the worker died only 2 hours later. Employer faces $16,131 in proposed penalties, an amount set by a federal statute. So, just here, let's see what they have here. Okay, so this is what they did. This is a little bit sneaky here. I'm sorry. The inspection date was well before the new fees took effect, and they finished the investigation 1 week after the new citation schedule was issued. A little bit dirty there. I don't like that. I don't like that kind of stuff. That's not nice. Because I doubt that they had heat stress issues in January. Now, this was a general duty clause violation here, right? So, as we know with the general duty clause, they have to not only tell you that it was a known hazard, that the hazard, the employees are exposed to hazards, and that there was a way of evading the hazards, and things of that nature, right? There's four different criteria for that, right? It was possible there was a way of fixing it, was recognized, and the employees were exposed, or it has to be serious or more higher or gravity. This is what we have there. I think that's that. I know I'll hear about it in the comments. The employer did not furnish employment and a place of employment which were free of recognized hazards that were causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. Now, how much money, right? A man died here, right? $16,131, that was the maximum, right? Now, explain to me how much money and how much more productivity you're going to get out of workers if you make sure that they have enough water, right? Basically water, sports drinks, things of that nature. How much does that cost you? Not a lot. One, it's not going to cost you the price of a worker's life, and it ain't going to cost you $16,131 right here. I don't know what to tell you about this. This is what I tell people in the hazmat field, right? So you're doing emergency response like I did for private companies, and things of that nature. Or you get a phone call late at night. Hey, Jim, we need you. There's a spill somewhere. You got to help out. Blah, blah, blah. What did I always do? And then what do I always recommend everybody do? Hey, you bring your own water. Because they're out there and they're not even sure what. You don't know what you're getting into, right? You're not sure at all what you're getting into. You can be getting into, you know, nothing is set up often. You say, well, Jim, you work with people who don't set things up. Well, we're talking, yeah. What, you're surprised that I work with people that don't set anything up? Really? Come on. You don't know what's being set up, what they're going to have. So the first day, bring water with you. Bring your own water. Bring your own sports drink. Whatever floats your boat. That's what I always tell people. And then, after that, now, 4 hours into it, you're an employer. You should have your own stuff. You should be all set up and ready to go. That's unreasonable. No, it's not really unreasonable. Right. So this is how you handle it. Guys, I'm giving you allowance quarterly, right? To go, here's your allowance, or you can show me receipts. Go out and make sure that you have a gallon of water with you at all times, in your car, in your locker, on your truck, whatever the case may be. 1 gallon of water. And then you tell your supervisors, right, especially if you get to a hazmat job, there are two questions that you have to have, among a lot of questions, but two of them. Number one, I tell people before they even touch anything, what are we going to do with the waste, right? What are we going to do? What are we generating? Do we need to generate waste? Well, that's important. Because you want to minimize any generation of hazardous materials in there. You don't want to add to the problem. That's number one. And number two, what's number two? Number two is water. Where are we going to get water and sanitation? Now, we get comments sometimes. At least I used to get comments all the time. Well, why don't these idiots go out there and, you know, we got idiots that are causing us money, causing us woe, causing us to spend a lot of money that we don't have, right? And things of that nature. Well, I don't know. There was one major furniture manufacturer that caused a change and that got the blame, at least, for causing change into your OSHA 300 logs and how record keeping is done. So my question is this. In the industry, if you have companies that are constantly causing problems and causing, like in this case, heat stress problems and people getting killed. I mean, a lot of people get killed from heat stress every year. Why aren't we as a community going out and shunning them? Yes, I said shun. Ostracize. Things of that nature. That's what the question is. Do we need to do that? Because I tell you what, OSHA has a very limited budget here. We're relying on insurance companies and the goodness and leadership of safety professionals and other management to guidance from non-governmental organizations like ANSI, ACGIH, you name it, to protect workers. At a certain point, right, because OSHA regulations apply to anybody who has a job, right, who is not an entrepreneur, who's not self-employed, who's not a government organization. At a certain point, wouldn't it make sense that we actually go out there, we learn what some of these regulations are, we have a lot of good programs, I have this show, Safety Wars, and everybody else on this network here, 17 people, 17 programs, 18 programs, something like that. And plus there are things not on this network, but I would concentrate on this network. But anyway, you know, that you sit down with your, especially when this 15-year-old we talked about. Hey, guys, no, fall protection is like a real thing in the roofing industry. Wouldn't it be nice for the parents or a guardian to say that? If they're not giving you fall protection, don't work there. Or better yet, you're going into a very highly hazardous working environment. If they're not giving you your fall protection, your equipment that you need, maybe, perhaps, you shouldn't be working there. I get phone calls often, especially in the summer with heat stress, from concerned parents that have taken our safety training classes over the years. Hey, my son, my daughter is in a working environment, summer job, and they're at risk. Right? What do I do? I don't know. Something that, you know, we're getting into the spring here, something to think about. Maybe, perhaps, right, as part of your graduation gift to your recent graduate, that, hey, send them to a safety training class. Don't rely on the employer. We're going to go into some EPA news here. And we will do share a screen again. Some of the stuff I got on here is non-governmental websites, and I show non-governmental websites on here. EPA reached a settlement with Greenledge Generation LLC on actions to address compliance with coal ash regulations. What do we got here? Today, the U.S. EPA, and this is February 6th, announced a settlement under the agency's coal ash program with these company and electrical generating plant in Dresden, New York. This settlement, the first national enforcement compliance initiatives, commits the company to address groundwater monitoring issues and to ensure the proper closure of coal ash surface impoundment under the RCRA Act, Resource Conservation Recovery Act. The company will also pay a fine of $105,000. Prior to 2015, the management and disposal of coal ash was not regulated at the national level. It was regulated to varying degrees, if at all, by some states under various programs. Historic disposal occurred through placement of unlined surface impoundments and landfills without proper containment management. Contaminants from coal ash can pollute waterways, groundwater, drinking water. So here we have what they're talking about are heavy metals, cadmium, arsenic, and cobalt, and the big one is mercury. So, okay, there we go on that. Now, well, there was some weird news out there, right? With now we're going to go on over to study finds. All right, Category 6: Why a devastating new hurricane level may be coming soon. This is an article by Study Finds staff out of Berkeley, California. With global warming and rising ocean temperatures making it even more catastrophic, climate scientist Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory proposing the addition of a hypothetical Category 6 to the Saffir-Simpson wind scale. The update would aim to address the estimation of risk. And the article is on and on. Okay, well, that's good. Updating, you know, things as a protocol for that. All right. So scientific knowledge increases. Here we have another one here. Computer internet connection is slow. Viagra for dementia. Erectile dysfunction linked to Alzheimer's protection. The UED medications like Viagra may provide an even greater health benefit, preventing Alzheimer's disease. A new study finds that these drugs reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's by nearly 20%. The problem is that I'm going to say this. I want to know who funded this. Because right now, these drugs are not covered by insurance for most things. Right. That's why they have all those things up in Canada, overseas, getting this stuff. So is this a thing where the insurance companies are trying to get this to be covered by insurance? Or the companies are trying to get this covered by insurance? Right? That way everybody makes more. This is a very graphic article. We're not going to. This is Dr. Ruth Brower from University College in London. So, I'm going to stop with the jokes there with this. I know. It's very tempting, people, to joke about this. I love blueberries. There was a story on blueberries that came out here. Oh, hold on. All right. Light scattering discovery explains why blueberries are blue. Okay, we're going to wait. So here we go. This is out of the UK from studyfinds.org. The unique color of blueberries comes from tiny structures in their wax coating, a discovery that can lead to eco-friendly paints, researchers in the United Kingdom explained. Scientists at the University of Bristol successfully harvested this substance to create an unprecedented blue coating, a breakthrough inspired by the natural hues of blueberries and other similarly colored fruits like damsons, sloes, and juniper berries. Study shows that a true source of the blueberry's blue coloration, which contrasts with the dark red pigments found in the school fruit skin, the blue hue is attributed to a wax layer enveloping the fruit, composed of minuscule structures that scatter blue and ultraviolet light. The scattering effect gives blueberries their blue appearance to human eyes and a blue UV appearance to birds, stemming from the interaction of light with a randomly arranged crystal. Wow, that's interesting. Okay. Most people, this is from study finds, most people clueless about their own blood pressure and cholesterol. Less than half of the population is aware of their own blood pressure, a new study reveals. Researchers from Ohio State reveal that while many adults can recall their childhood address or their best friend's birthday, fewer than half of them know anything about their blood pressure readings or ideal weight. Moreover, and one in five people know their cholesterol and blood sugar levels. The research involved questioning over 1,000 American adults about their awareness of their blood pressure, ideal weight, cholesterol, and blood sugar levels. Conducted by researchers at The Ohio State University, the team aimed to highlight the importance of monitoring these health metrics to identify risks of heart disease. Yeah, I can attest to that. Now, you ask people what their A1C level is, they look at you like you have you ask a diabetic what it is, and if they right again, that's another leading indicator. What was your last A1C? So what, they don't know. Now this is one that I can relate to. Dangerous after effects linked to using mixed reality headsets. I had not heard of mixed reality until I read this article the other day. Mixed reality headsets becoming all the rage. These cutting-edge devices, which overlay digital content to the real world through pass-through video technology, could revolutionize our daily lives, yet they come with a set of challenges that might hinder widespread adoption for continuous use. Stanford University researchers have uncovered unsettling facts while studying headsets, including dangerous after-effects. Mixed reality, also known as spatial computing, is one of the most thought-about stuff. So what it looks like is, let's say that you are walking in a barren field. You're able to put these devices on, as my understanding, and you're able to see trees, right? See trees and everything else going through. Now, I tell you, the creep factor for all this is way over the top. I got an itchy head here. I don't know what it is. If you see me on the streamers, I'm away over there. Away. I mean, come on. At what point do we say this is wrong? I don't know. Can you imagine somebody going, can you imagine somebody going through a, a park or something like that, or putting in, you know, inappropriate things on, and then you go, you know, they're walking through, and then, you know, you see people doing, you know, that sort of thing out there. And, it's not good. I mean, this is creepy for me. I prefer real reality rather than mixed reality. Bar scene dying. Gen Z wants to drink at home. Could drinking at home become the new night out at the bar? A new 2 and 3 Gen Z wine enthusiasts for the comments when it comes to drinking. The poll of 2,000 American adults between 21 and 26 year olds finds that those who enjoy drink wine, only 23% would choose to go to a bar, and only 18% would opt for drinking at a live event. For Gen Z wine enthusiasts, having a glass is important as an opportunity to be social as hanging out with friends. Now, I noticed this when I was, you know, my parents passed away recently. We were cleaning out the house, and my dear cousin Susan, who is an occasional listener, did bring up something very observant. And my other friend, Nora, same thing. Now, back in the day, 60s and 70s, when people had large families, every weekend there was stuff going on. And when we cleaned out my mother's house, we found a lot of stuff from the 60s and 70s. Well, touch. Since the 60s and 70s, alcohol. And, you know, because every weekend people drank at home. Now, I think more is going on here than the story mentions here. This is also all study finds. We're taking that. And I tend to do that once a week. You're taking everything from study finds. You go out, again, when you go out to a bar, how much a glass of wine go for? And I don't mean like, good wine. I mean, $10 for a glass, $10 for a glass, $10 for beer. You want to go out and have a good time. Guess what? You're, you know, with that. Now, on the other hand, who wants to get caught with a DUI or DWI in New Jersey? DWI or DUI? Is that really what you want? So, we have Uber, we have Lyft and everything else, but no, driving drunk, not a good idea, never a good idea. And maybe this is just people, things catching up
here,
catching up. The generation now comes up here. Hey, I get the generation. A lot of them don't want to drive. You know, now they don't want to go out to drink in bars. Maybe I've had a conversation with my colleagues with the young adults, they sit at home on Zoom or Teams, and they go with friends and they start drinking. This started during COVID, right? I know a couple of the organizations I work with, that's what they had. They had a Zoom social hour. Okay, we're going to watch a movie, whatever else, for an hour and a half, and watch it as a group here. And they'll throw in an old movie and have it on Zoom. That sort of thing. I don't know. Oh, well, we're at the top of the hour here, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and we will see you tomorrow. Let me do our outro here.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.